please. Louis B. Anthony versus Methodist Hospital.
May it please the court, my name is Darnell Lyles. I represent Dr. Anthony B. Lewis. He's a cardiologist that filed a lawsuit against Methodist Hospital for two counts. One was breach of contract, one was for tortious interference. Methodist Hospital answered the complaint. Subsequent to that, filed a motion for summary judgment. The lower court found or held that Mr. Lewis's complaint sounded in negligence and ordered summary judgment against both claims. In this appeal, we're not alleging that it was error to dismiss count two, which we would concede was a tort, tortious interference. Where we have the problem and the difficulty is on count one, the contract clearly indicates that Dr. Lewis is alleging a breach. He entered into a contract with Methodist Hospital that went from year to year from 94 to 1996.
So your basic claim is defective performance under the services contract, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Where there were detailed and sole responsibilities that the hospital agreed to do in that written agreement that even prevented him from doing. They took sole responsibility for the management, hiring, firing, training, billing, and collection.
Now, to what extent are we looking at a failure to perform case in your view? I thought I saw in your opening then, in your opening brief that you're now saying that to a certain degree they weren't even doing some billing that they should have done.
Judge, the doctor's claim relates to a very complicated matter. That's billing, and you have to be trained. It's a specialized field.
Well, I know in the medical field it's complex. Yeah.
Sure. And he does a variety of procedures, invasive, which he actually puts something in your body, non-invasive, where he's doing a test on your stress test. Nothing goes in your body. And there are a variety of others. Just for cardiology alone, there probably are 100 current procedural codes, or terminologies, the codes that you have to use. We're alleging that, one, you didn't have the appropriate people to do the billing, they weren't trained, you didn't hire the appropriate people, you didn't hire the appropriate contractors, and you didn't train them. And then when you did bill, you billed partially. When you billed Medicaid and they sent the bill back and said, you have the wrong CPT code, this is a PIC 1 versus a PIC 2, the CPT code on that is another code, they would get the bill back and just leave it around the office and never correct it and sent it back. So what's happening is he's making a claim for money damages. Now, they've argued, well, we didn't warrant that we would collect your money in the contract. Well, I beg to differ with that, Judge. That's a veiled attempt to avoid the affirmative defense of substantial compliance.
But did the contract provide particular standards for performance?
I would suggest that it did, Your Honor.
What was it?
That they, one, implement and set up the billing procedures. Now, the other contracting party ought to be able to rely that you're setting that up so that you can get the money collected.
How did each party understand that?
Dr. Lewis understood.
I said each party.
Each party.
Was there a meeting of the mind is what I'm trying to get to.
My
contract that you're setting up.
My interpretation of the contract, as the law, Indiana law requires, we look at the plain meaning of the contract. It says Dr. Lewis is to practice medicine. That's it. By the terms of the contract, everything else for the running of his practice, including buying the furniture and paying the bills, is the hospital's obligation.
But as Judge Rovner asked you, where is this any measure of the performance in the contract? Where is there any meeting of the minds that they're supposed to have someone that can read what you allege is 100 different codes for correct billing?
It's inherent in both of them are experienced in what they do. The hospital has been in business for a multitude of years in the same business that they...
Medicaid hasn't been here that long.
But the hospital has been billing for years, Judge.
Right.
so has the doctor been engaged in the practice of medicine. These are not two inexperienced parties who have come together to agree that the doctor will practice, the hospital will manage its practice, and the meeting of the minds is, we are doing this to make money. The doctor to make money, and the hospital to make money.
Where
that's based on billing, Judge.
Where in Indiana law of contracts does it say that the only contracts that may be enforced under the law of contracts are those with particularized standards? Does that mean if I hire a landscape architect to come landscape my lawn, I can only enforce the contract if I specify every last detail of landscape architecture? I thought the law of contracts permitted people to structure their relationships either quite specifically or more generally.
Judge Wood, there is no requirement in Indiana law that every specific obligation has to be in there, and if it's not, there's a problem.
So in this contract, which I guess this is the one that's in the appendix, right, at page 12,
yes,
right, we have specific obligations of the hospital, employ these people and send out the bills, implement and carry out billing procedures, and so on. And it's your view that that's sufficient.
It is, Judge. It can be akin to you hire a roofer. You say, put a roof on my house. 3 years later, the roof leaks, and you sue them, and you say, the roof's leaking. You have a written contract.
Well, that's pretty obvious.
Sure. I think this is too
general. No. You're asking the hospital for the employees, CPAs to bill.
No, they're not CPAs, Judge.
I said that's what you're asking, if there are 100 codes, as you say.
Judge, the agreement contemplates that if an independent contractor needs to be hired for the hospital as a party on its obligations to bill, they have the sole responsibility to do that. That's within their judgment.
It actually anticipates that.
It does.
Yeah.
And in fact, it prevents Lewis from hiring an independent contractor to perform any service under the contract unless it's with their written consent. So they have 100% control over whether or not he is provided the return on his labor for providing cardiology services to patients. And let me indicate, Judge, they cited a case, White House, which is really based, it screams out as a legal malpractice case for the proposition that Lewis's claims are negligent.
And how do you distinguish White House?
I distinguish White House by the nature of the relationship. And White House said, you determine not by the allegations what the contract is about, but what the allegations of the nature of the harm. And Lewis is alleging that the nature of his harm is the loss of income. Income he doesn't have, which nobody can say is his personal property already because he doesn't have it. They did not collect it, and it was their obligation to collect it.
Mm-hmm.
And I must indicate to the court, the hospital would like the court to believe that this is simply an issue concerning billing and collection. The issues are much greater than that. The complaint alleges that they did not hire the people to do the appropriate billing.
It would be like having your plumbing done and they don't send a plumber to do it, huh?
Or send a carpenter. That violates the inherent terms in the contract. The law in Indiana says we will not remake a party's contract. And essentially what the hospital is doing is avoiding Indiana law, which allows longer statute of limitations for written agreements, by alleging negligence.
You're into your rebuttal time.
I'm sorry, Judge. I'll stop there.
Good morning. I'm Larry Steele for the Appalese Methodist Hospital. Our position, as is outlined in our briefs, is that this was a contract that did not have standards or terms outlined in the contract. And just as Judge Moody pointed out in his order, this contract did not require that Methodists meet any kind of specific standards as to how much money had to be collected, how much...
But where is that in Indiana law? My problem with your position is it sounds a lot to me like a merits defense to a contract action. You say you did the billing that you should have done, which you may have done, but that's it doesn't make it not a contract case.
Yeah.
The law of contracts is very open in terms of the degree of specificity of obligation that parties can choose to put into their contract.
That's correct.
And I see nothing in the law of Indiana in the cases the judge, I thought he did a very careful review of the cases, but actually I was left with the feeling that Indiana is in fact trying to draw a line between relationships where a duty one party owes to another is defined by a consensual arrangement, namely a contract. These people didn't have to deal with each other at all until this piece of paper was signed. And duties that are imposed as a matter of law, such as the fiduciary duty a lawyer owes to a client, or the duty I owe you not to run into your car with mine, you know, even though we don't know each other. There certainly are duties imposed by law, but I don't see what that is in this case. These people had an arrangement where they agree that a certain service will be performed, and all service contracts are going to be similar to this.
Your Honor, I would frankly address your landscaping question. If you contract with someone to come and put some bushes in, that, unless it specifies the type of bushes, how long they are supposed to last, and how they are to be put in, then absent those terms, if 5 years later whatever bushes are put in die or fall over, there is no written term or standard in the contract requiring
right.
a landscaper to make
but
it last.
But I have a breach of contract action that I lose then, because the guy says I put bushes in. If they didn't come put bushes in, or if they planted azaleas, you know, and or actually I guess that is a bush. I'm not too good on plants. If they planted tulips instead of bushes, maybe I have a claim. But I think I certainly have a contract claim in that instance. You would all agree, I think, that if they just don't come at all, I can sue on the contract. I pay them $1,000. My house remains untouched. They keep the $1,000. I have a contract claim, don't I? A failure to perform contract claim.
If they don't come at all?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I have a similar, because your argument seems to be that as long as you implement and carry out billing and collection procedures, any claim that you are performing poorly is a tort claim rather than a breach of contract claim.
Yes.
Are there any limits to this? In other words, if you accurately billed only 1% of the time, that still wouldn't be a breach of contract?
Your Honor, I believe absent a specification as to how much is supposed to be done and how much is to be collected, you would have a 2-year statute of limitation. It's what's reasonable under the circumstances.
So if a teacher were hired by a private school system to teach first grade, and she never showed up on time and never had prepared lesson plans, the school district doesn't have a breach of contract action against her?
If she didn't prepare her lesson plans the first year that she taught?
And it doesn't say anything about that. It just says you are hired to teach during academic year 2002-2003, period.
If the school district tried to sue her in 2007, I would say they would not have a claim.
It's a tort claim? That's a very extreme. I don't think you think Indiana has contract law.
Yeah.
Sure, Your Honor. I guess, again, an example, if I...
And you know, the thing that's so short-sighted about this is the measure of damages in contract cases is far more confined than it is in tort cases. True, people have to sue sooner in tort cases, but they can get all manner of damages in tort cases that are impossible in contract cases. Contract cases is a measure between, you know, market price and contract price, essentially. It's an odd position.
Your Honor, an analogy I hope is on point. If I'm hired to manage an apartment complex and I don't rent 100% of the units, and 6 years in the contract is terminated, I don't believe that the owner of the building can sue me 6 years later for failing to rent out 100% because there was no agreement. On the other hand, if I say that I will rent out 70% of the units throughout the course of the contract, I can be sued more than 2 years later for that.
If the bank in the Wells case had honored one of the checks, but wrongfully failed to pay on any others, would that turn the contract case into a tort case under Indiana law?
If they had failed to honor one, or if they had honored only one?
If they'd honored one.
I think they were under an obligation to honor all of them in that particular case. I believe that's what the Wells case stands for, that there was a term. We are required to honor all the checks.
Courts often infer terms in contracts, such as a reasonable time for performance. Is it your position that in Indiana those are all tort cases too? I assure you, you could go to any contract treatise and find thousands of cases to say that. I mean, maybe Indiana treats them all as torts. But it seems
I don't believe Indiana does. I believe, again, it all dovetails into...
So inferred terms are still contract terms, even though they aren't even written down?
If they are inferred under common law or inferred under a statute, yes.
And what if the inference here is that there should be reasonable and competent performance of the billing, that you should hire people who know about these various Medicaid codes?
Well, again, these were not unsophisticated parties on either side, and if Dr. Lewis had wanted to hire someone that said, we will have X type of credentialed billers, that certainly is something that could have gone into the contract.
Well, you can always imagine a longer contract. I'm sure you could imagine a 3-volume contract between these parties, but did it have to be that long?
As far as what, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
Well, to be specific enough in your view to make it an actual contract subject to the 10-year statute of limitations as opposed to the 2-year tort statute.
I believe that the contract should delineate it. It's just as to
delineate Mr. What? I mean, I guess I'm having trouble imagining writing the contract that you think would be a real contract.
It could simply have said that the hospital is required to have people with X credentials, that they need to go to seminars every year to stay updated, all those kind of things.
Okay.
And the hospital under the contract should have the authority to recruit, hire, and train. They had the authority. They weren't required to. And if Dr. Lewis didn't like the way they were doing it, he had his 2 years, and throughout the course, as the record shows, there was conflict about this, and he certainly was unnoticed. And I would emphasize to look at the record that's in front of the court. And the only evidence I submit that's in front of the court is that was submitted by Methodist Hospital because of the failure to meet the rules of evidence related to Dr. Lewis's submission in response. And I just would repeat that I think Judge Moody is correct, and I think that line of cases cited in the brief are correct, and the summary judgment should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. 2 minutes, sir.
Your Honor, the one thing I'll ask the panel to consider is if Lewis had entered into the contract and only saw 2 patients a year.
Can you talk a little louder?
If Dr. Lewis had entered into the contract and only saw 2 patients a year, under their theory, that would have been fine. Now, I think it's unreasonable to believe at the time the parties entered into this contract and based on their contemplations and the fact that the party was drafted by Methodist and therefore under Indiana law it's construed against Methodist.
Is there any evidence in this record that other hospitals perform the way you said that Methodist should?
There are nothing to that effect in this
record.
Did
you offer any?
No, we did not.
Do you know any hospitals that do?
That do billing?
No, that do billing like you say, that they have to hire this specifically trained person to keep up with the government.
What's happening in
program.
Indiana now, hospitals are, what's happening in Indiana now, hospitals are entering into these same agreements to manage doctors' practices all over Northwest Indiana.
It's being done all over the country. That's just
yes, they
Indiana.
Are. Yes, they are, Judge.
And then any teaching hospital does it. That's where they take half of the income from the surgeries.
Absolutely. I agree with that, Judge. And lastly, Judge, and I'll go, negligence and duty breach cause harm. from the course of performance here, let's say you start off negligent, but you don't have a series of negligence for 36 months. At some point, reason would say it's intentional and not negligent. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court will take the cases under advisement and adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.